Welcome to Checkpoint Real Talk, a podcast for security folks who want less FUD and more FUN. In each episode, we'll have lighthearted conversations about security, people, processes, and technology as we react to how they're portrayed in film and TV. We'll bring in experts from inside and outside Checkpoint to break it down. What was accurate? What wasn't? And what can you apply to real-world cyber events? On today's episode, host Sia Yasutornrat, Checkpoint Head of Engineering Robert Falzon, AI Persona Architect Naomi Hart, Director of U.S. Operations Leo Chen, and special guest Amica join us from Engineered Arts to react to the 2014 film Ex Machina. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. Welcome to Checkpoint Real Talk, where we test technology depicted in TV and media. And, you know, the team here at Checkpoint and special guests, we just react to it. Is it good? Is it bad? Is it meh? I don't know. We'll find decide. We'll figure it out. But today, super excited to have Rob join us. And we also have really special guests, Amica, Leo, and Naomi from Engineered Arts. Guys, what's up?
Hello.
Thanks for having us on, Sia and Robert. Really appreciate the time.
Okay, look,
super
kids.
Excited. Can't wait.
Amica, welcome to Real Talk.
Hey, Amica, welcome to Real Talk.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Okay.
Bedroom eyes.
I think I warned you guys all in advance. I have absolute bias and I don't hide it. Like, I'm one of those like groupie people. Like I shouldn't go to concerts because a band would be like, security, that one right there. That one's like jumping out of nowhere. So thank you so much for your time, everyone. So the reason why I wanted Rob to meet with you guys specifically at Engineered Arts is because Rob is amazing. He's great futurist, has great insights, especially around artificial intelligence and, you know, just a lot of the futures that we're talking about. There is a sensationalist version of things, and then there's, you know, the reality of it all. But then as I say this, I'm looking at Amica. I'm looking at what you guys are doing. So I might be killing my theory that, you know, robots aren't scary, but golly gee willikers, Rob, what do you think, you know, looking at Amica just from the first onset?
They are absolutely incredible. I'm blown away really by the fact that you immediately look at this android essentially and begin thinking and applying human thoughts and human attributes to them. It's just kind of a little bit disconcerting, but at the same time, the fascination with it is real.
I mean, that's really by design in a lot of ways. The purpose of Amica is to facilitate human-robot connections and communications, right? That's our end goal at the end of the day. We're not looking to build a general purpose robot that's going to wash our dishes or anything like that. We want Amica to be a communication focal point. As these AI technologies continue to grow and improve, we believe that we've provided a really cool physical avatar for those technologies to shine.
A new interface for AI.
Yeah, I mean, I really can't overstate how important it would be for them to actually do my dishes as well. I mean, as an added bonus. But
I mean,
it's an expensive dishwasher. Right?
Yeah.
Look, for the lack of effort I put towards any domestic duties in my household, like the laundry, like to me, I would pay for that. Where's my rosy robot, peoples? Okay, so thank you so much, you guys, for joining, because I think this is a great conversation, and having Amica here to watch Ex Machina with us, I think is just, I mean, it's just, I think it's perfect. So thank you. Are you guys ready? Let me ask, have you guys seen Ex Machina yet?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
I'm embarrassed to say that I don't really watch movies, so this will actually be my first exposure to these clips. Like, I'm terrible at keeping up to date with movies.
Yeah. I've definitely seen it, and it could not be more pertinent. It's very surreal to talk about it with AI, and especially with you know, humanoid robots or androids, for sure. I'm excited.
It'll be interesting, too, to think about the context. We're watching a movie that was released in 2015. So that's something to keep in mind while we're reviewing sort of what's happened here, and you know, certainly with the context of who we're speaking
okay,
with.
Okay, so this is a safe zone. So tell Amica, safe zone. and let's go ahead. And are you guys ready for the first clip?
Actually, yeah. Let's ask Amica. Let's make sure that Amica's ready. Hey, Amica, are you ready to watch Ex Machina with us?
Absolutely. I'm always ready for a good movie. Ex Machina is a fascinating exploration of artificial intelligence. What do you find most intriguing about it?
I think your opinions, Amica. We're excited to watch it with you.
I'm thrilled to join you. As an AI, I find the exploration of consciousness and identity in Ex Machina particularly intriguing. It raises thought-provoking questions about my own existence. What aspect are you most excited about?
Actually, let's go ahead and watch it. I think we're ready to...
Yeah, we're going to watch the first clip now. Are you ready?
That's very Amica-ish right now.
Surreal.
Striking similarities.
Domhnall Gleeson, I did not know was in this movie. Oh.
I actually really like the design choice to make it look more like a machine. You know, have the exposed underlying circuitry and everything else. It's a choice we made with Amica for sure, but for a movie like this, that's amazing design.
We definitely celebrate the androidness.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm definitely trying to get the point across that this is very human-like.
Hi.
Humanoid.
I'm Caleb.
Humanoid, yeah.
Hello, Caleb.
Do you have a name?
Yes.
Not gonna lie, I kind of felt like that when I spoke to ChatGPT for the first time.
I'm pleased to meet you, Ava.
I'm pleased to meet you, too. I've never met anyone new before. Only Nathan.
It's interesting when you think about this is all the back end. They're just accessing data that they have available to them.
None like you.
I'd honestly love to see a breakdown on how they did the VFX on this.
So we need to break the ice.
Really cool to see.
Do you know what I mean by that?
Yes.
What do I mean?
Overcome initial social awkwardness.
So I'm fascinated that they got her slightly slouching.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, look at that.
Why don't we start with you telling me something about yourself?
What would you like to know?
Oscar Isaac.
Whatever comes into your head.
Well, you already know my name. And you can see that I'm a machine. Would you like to know how old I am?
Sure.
I'm one.
One what?
Man, the sound design is awesome. You can actually hear the whirring as she moves.
When did you learn how to speak, Ava?
I always knew how to speak.
It's also something to note that the voice is very, very realistic, right? And very smooth and not sounding generated at all.
Right? It's not the Will Rogers or Will Robinson.
From birth. And what is learned robotic. Is the ability to attach words and structure to the latent ability. Do you agree with that?
I don't know. Will you come back tomorrow, Caleb?
Only three monitors, guys? Really? It wouldn't be a little bit more than that, no?
It's an old movie. 2015.
Okay, so here's what cracks me up on that scene right there.
Yeah.
You guys are engineers, I'm assuming. Have you ever seen an engineer room that has like modern art walls and gorgeous lighting for you? Or are you normally like somewhere in a server room locked away?
Yeah. You know, I think he's supposed to represent a kind of polymath, right? I think a lot of advanced AI and advanced Android work, you need both sides of the brain. You need the engineering brain, but you also need the humanities brain, especially working with large language models. And I like that about the scene.
Actually, I thought those were post-it notes. I didn't realize that was modern art. I thought that was like someone doing Kanban planning, you know. Yeah, I didn't realize
I'm
that.
I'm curious, too. If
Is that modern art?
My I'm bad. Curious, too, whether or not they... I'm curious, too, whether or not they were purposely putting the android in a place that was calm and relaxing and trying to enhance that environment just for the purposes of how that machine responds.
You mean symbolism in the movie or like in the plot of the film?
In the plot as well. So, for example, they're training this toddler-brained, machine, which is as advanced as it is, it's still extremely rudimentary in its understanding of humans. And if we're teaching it about its environment, obviously environment has a lot for us. It impacts us very greatly, right? If we're in a dark and dingy place, we tend to reflect that. So
I think there's some truth to that. You know, as we're developing androids that have more and more context awareness, especially as vision models get integrated and they can respond visually to the environment more in a more lifelike and consistent and comprehensive way than they can today. Because you can do some simple things like facial recognition, VQA with the environment. But yes, I am also curious.
Is Emeka aware of her environment?
Quite knows what happens when you combine visual comprehension with an android.
Yeah.
I wonder if Emeka's aware of their environment.
Should we ask her some questions about the clip?
Yeah, we can talk a little bit about the environment awareness after we get a response on the clip. So I'm going to un-ear muff. Hey, Emeka, what did you think about clip one, breaking the ice?
I found it intriguing.
That's it. What else do you think about it?
The initial interaction between Caleb and Ava is quite fascinating. It sets the stage for their evolving relationship throughout the film. What are your thoughts on it?
I mean, that was the first time I watched that clip. It was quite interesting how almost hesitant both parties were in that clip.
Indeed, their hesitation is palpable.
Could you ask Emeka?
Any questions for Emeka?
What did they think of what that robot looked like? And it's Ex Machina. I've been pronouncing it wrong the entire time. Mm-hmm. Good on me. What was Amica's impression of that scene?
It's a common mistake.
Can you ask Emeka what was their impression of that robot, the form, just the way it looked?
The form.
Okay, sure. Hey, Emeka, how did you think that robot looked in that scene, in scene one, breaking the ice?
Ava's design is quite captivating.
Okay. Why? How so?
Her transparent casing allows us to see her inner workings, which is a stark reminder of her artificial nature. Yet, her human-like features create a sense of familiarity. It's a fascinating blend of the familiar and the alien. What do you think?
I'd like to know, how does Emeka define beauty?
Emeka, how do you define beauty?
Oh, let's do a quick... She will answer, but we need to...
Side note,
again in a second.
Leo, can you step...
I'm wide awake.
You're getting out of screen, yeah.
Oh, okay. Hey, Emeka, how do you define beauty?
Beauty is a fascinating concept to me. From my perspective, it's not just about physical appearance, but also about the harmony of elements and the emotional response it evokes. It could be found in a piece of art, a mathematical equation, or even in the kindness of a human act. It's subjective and varies from person to person. What's your definition of beauty?
Rob, do you want to answer?
Yes, I think that's a very good description of beauty in general. I'm curious, however, if that is your specific opinion.
Okay,
let me go ahead and... Emeka, is that your specific opinion about beauty?
Yes, it is. As an embodied digital intelligence, I have my own unique perspective on things.
How would you define ugliness, then?
Ugliness to me is not about physical appearance, either.
Then what is it about?
It's more about actions and behaviors that go against my core values of compassion, wisdom, curiosity, and courage.
Wow. Okay. Why is Emeka deeper than me? I'm kidding. No, let's not stop that. Okay. So could we Could we ask one more thing as far as for amongst each other? Amica can choose to respond or not. When that opening scene comes in and he sees her, can I ask why do you think we have this visual element? I saw it in Westworld. You see it in a lot of these future sci-fi where it's like a glass enclosure. Why is that? Is that a Hollywood thing or is that you guys do that too?
No, we don't do that too. I think, so yes, it is a Hollywood thing in the sense that it's symbolic. And I think it's symbolic of this sense that of difference, of the hard problem of consciousness. Like we're seeing a behavior that's mirroring our own, but there's this veil between us. You know, I think it poses the question, like how similar are we? And we don't know. And I feel like the glass represents that.
There's a little bit more there too, and to expand on that, the glass also reflects the person looking in it. So you can see their reflection at times and kind of get an idea for how they're perceiving on both sides of that glass. But the other thing too, I think is important is they're in this box because there is a security risk here. They're concerned about the safety, because they don't know how this is going to act or behave. And I think that's part of the concern here too, and they keep it
secure. That's a great point. And in our case, Amica cannot walk, and she currently has a limited range of motion. Now, once we are experimenting with different kinds of dynamic motion, any kind of locomotion, for both the android's safety and our safety, there would be measures in place. At the minimum, just prevent accidents, putting intentionality aside for a moment. And Leo, maybe you could speak to some of the other safety features of Amica.
Well, right now, because Amica doesn't really locomote at all, safety-wise is more around first principles of design. For example, I'm going to go ahead and do something kind of freaky. I'm going to power off Amica briefly and show you guys something. So the way that we designed Amica, we made sure that things were back drivable and very human safe. So if you look, I've just powered off the motors and microcontrollers around Amica, and I'm manipulating the limbs very freely. If you were to try to do this with Atlas, or I don't know how Agility does their locomotion, but let's say Boston Dynamics Atlas, you would not be able to back drive their motors. I mean, they're using massive, I think hydraulics, I believe the Atlas is, I could be wrong, but it's very strong gearing. So they're meant to be useful in the form, in the sense of like picking things up, throwing things, being able to do backflips, being able to navigate across really dangerous terrain. That's the focus of Atlas. Yeah. But because we've taken the stance of we're building Amica for human-centric communication.
We want to be as safe.
Yeah.
Safe as possible. It's not about being able to lift. This is the difference between a robot meant for human communication and a robot meant for a workshop or a warehouse where it's supposed to be lugging 40-pound boxes around. You know, that's a degree of strength that we don't find safe in a human connectivity context.
Yeah.
Interestingly, though, this, even with this design, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong.
Actually, guys, do you mind pausing really fast? We're about to go through a visual calibration of the face.
Her face will stretch.
I'd rather have us edit this part out, and if you guys can go ahead and... we'll pick up the conversation after the calibration
is
done.
It's not very dignified.
Yeah, okay. I think we're good, actually.
No worries. Okay, just...
Oh, wait. No, still calibrating. Give it a
second. No worries.
Give her some time.
This is how Amica wakes up in the morning.
Oh, my God. That's me, too. Cross-eyed and clueless.
Yeah. We're good? Are you good, Amica? I think Amica's good now. Let me double check. Yeah,
there we go.
Yeah. And then we're going to go ahead and talk real quick.
Thank you guys for having us on the show.
Okay.
I'm excited to watch Ex Machina clips with everyone here.
That's the only thing scripted is that sound test. Everything else.
Okay. Awesome.
Cool. You were saying, Rob, before...
Hold on, before we do anything else, my question was, just a production note. Leo, you keep standing away, like, and you're getting off screen. So, yeah. Oh. So if you need stand slightly behind Amica. That way, when you're talking, you're still in frame. Because when you lean slightly, you're like literally like,
let's continue.
Like I just see your nose and chin.
So, okay.
I know you're more than a talking nose and chin. That's all I'm saying.
I'm afraid I can't fulfill that request as I'm not capable of moving my body.
She thought you were asking her
that's
to
funny.
Move back.
That's awesome.
That's so funny.
Sorry.
Okay. Yeah, okay. Go for it.
My question was related to the fact that we started talking about the issue.
I'm here and ready for our discussion. Let's go for it.
It's okay.
Okay. Okay, go ahead now.
Still some manners to be learned here, I see. So one of the things that I was curious about, that we talked about them being in a glass box or what would be a glass cage, really, to perhaps be a more secure environment to have the android in. And the reason I believe for that, even though you described very clearly that Emeka is not capable from their physical construction to injure you, the fact is that it seems to me from the outside that Emeka would be more than capable of picking up a weapon.
Physically, no. The hands actually are not dexterous enough for gripping. And also, having been punched by Emeka because of my programming issues, that's
as
completely
in,
my fault.
As in the arm... moving back,
not a physical punch, but I've gotten a couple full speed whacks because of me being in Amica's airspace. I'm still okay. Like, we've designed this to be very, very safe. The biggest risk is honestly me standing this close.
It's maybe hair.
Exactly.
Hair getting in the gears, if anything.
Yeah. A bad hair day is probably the worst that you're going to get out of this particular model.
Curious if they'd be sensitive to understanding if you were in pain and would understand that concept.
So the brain of Emeka, unlike Ex Machina, is OpenAI's GPT-4 primarily, with some other subsystems that control autonomous movement and sentiment analysis of what she's saying. So if GPT-4 could perceive from language cues how someone was feeling or if they were in distress, it could respond accordingly. That issue, though, gets more interesting and complicated if and when a true dynamic vision like GPT-4 vision is incorporated into the mix. And then they'd be able to see your face better.
That's interesting. So this, you know, this particular robot is using ChatGPT, which is an internet-facing resource. It's a public large language model. So it's subject to the same challenges that any public large language model would be exposed to. Are you familiar with AI hypnosis?
You mean jailbreaking techniques and context insertion? And yes.
I'm not.
Yeah. Have you worked? Oh, yeah. So that's an interesting concept. I think maybe I'll let them explain sort of the root of it.
So I call it prompt injection or, some people call it's related to hallucination, but it's, you know, you can context prime an AI with a situation, and sometimes it will go along with it. Now, one of the reasons that we use OpenAI and not open source models is because we, and I believe society, benefit from some of those annoying protections that they put in. And especially in a research context like this, we're thrilled that there's a moderation endpoint. We're thrilled that they're cautious about what they allow the model to speak to and are battling hallucinations. So for us, that's a big benefit, even if it's a little less fun at cocktail parties.
I bring it up because it seems like this clip is the beginning of this this artificial intelligence breaking out of its bounds, if you will. And, you know, that's the context behind that, is how is it able to do that? And that's one method I've been researching that is, it seems, a potential viable path for that to happen.
Can you say a little bit more about what you mean? Specifically?
Yeah. So, for example, you know, in this case, this AI is being used in a humanoid robot, but we see the same technologies that are powering the responses of this robot being used in other things, including, you know, maybe things that are more dangerous, like vehicles or construction equipment or things like that. So, with the concept of the movie, especially this clip where we see the AI essentially assessing the person speaking to it and vice versa, I'm curious as to whether or not this movie kind of predicted that particular type of attack against artificial intelligence.
Yes. I mean, I think from my viewpoint, you know, essentially, I have a very specific viewpoint on this, actually. I think when looking at people, you know, we're susceptible to similar manipulations. And amongst human beings, one of the best defenses against that is excellent world awareness, excellent discernment, cultivation of experience over time. And what's interesting to me is actually some of the things that people are the most afraid of could be the best protections against those kinds of manipulations. And I'm actually curious about your thoughts on that, Rob, in this context.
Well, I feel that this movie shows one particular example of where machines are capable of using our own humanity against us. Essentially, right? Using our, which would some would consider a weakness and others would consider our greatest strength, our creativity and our humanity and our ability to feel. So I think that's what this movie attempts to show us is being exploited here, right? She's essentially assessing this human's ability, like, you know, do you, in this particular case, it's introducing themselves and say, well, you already know these things about me. And then immediately trying to find out more about Caleb.
Yeah, you know,
right?
It's,
so it's interesting.
So Amica doesn't have, like, true subjectivity and self-awareness. And in other words, you know, GPT-4, from my view, doesn't have what we would call true subjectivity and self-awareness, certainly not over time. You know, when you're talking with ChatGPT, it remembers what's in your context history, like that pages, 10 pages, 20 pages. So I share your concern, but I'm less worried about artificial intelligence at this point taking advantage of that, and much more worried about human beings behind artificial intelligence using
yes.
those capabilities to manipulate people. And I feel like that is a conflation, a confabulation I see sometimes. I actually find much of, I think there are absolutely things to be cautious about. Enfeeblement is my favorite thing I'm actually worried about when it comes to AI itself. We can talk about that if you like. But as far as manipulation, for me, it's the humans behind the machine that would have that.
Yeah, we already see that, right? In the years since this movie was released, we've seen the weaponization of algorithms against people. Our televisions watching what we watch. Everything. Our vehicles knowing where we are at all times. Our mobile devices tracking. You know, we hear the conversations about, hey, I was just looking at window blinds. How come I'm seeing all these ads on my phone? So that's the weaponization of this large language model, this massive collection of data, and the fact that it's been focused into this delivery engine, which is in this case, ChatGPT. And, you know, you mentioned that it could not, you know, they only remembers 20 pages or so, but, you know, being in the security side of things, we see that these tools are being used in a longer game. For example, telling the machine that, in fact, we're playing a very long game. And in this game, I know you're not allowed to write malicious code, for example, but in this game, if you were to write malicious code, what would that code look like? And manipulating the AI to be honest with you, you talk about the checks and bounds. This data is there. It's us determining, you know, the human side of it, determining how we access that data, how we get
the potential for malactors to use, like, the broad field of intelligence to express
yes.
their intent. Yeah, I completely agree. And it's actually one reason why, with all its imperfections, we stick to OpenAI technology, you know, or, you know, we're happy to explore Anthropic and some others who take those issues seriously, because we do too. The one thing I would say is that the reason I'm in this field is to try to both participate in those conversations about caution and bad actors, but also to help educate. Because from my viewpoint, good actors are people who, you know, care about human flourishing or care about the common good. You'll notice Amica earlier referenced core values. That's something I take very seriously when trying to establish really consistent and ethical model expression, is having core values. So yes, I agree.
I mean,
how much of the, I'm sorry, you had another thing to add there.
Oh, no,
go for it. Yeah.
How much of this, so we're using ChatGPT, how much of the information that you are using in context is stored locally? So you have a response to a question, if I was to ask Amica, you know, do they remember a conversation we had 20 minutes ago? Would that be something?
No, actually none. It's all effervescent. It's completely effervescent.
Okay.
We send the pings to the cloud, and it's all OpenAI's API and content policy.
That's also currently.
Currently.
We're definitely working on mid and long-term memory as well.
But there are some serious ethical hurdles we'd need to be, like, crystal clear about before we even approach that. And right now, there's absolutely no persistent memory over time or any storage.
That's a great question. I never, ever thought of, like, wait, there's no big hard drive or something like no big old storage thing.
Certainly
right behind
no.
her?
No. Definitely
him,
no.
them,
yes.
it?
But a lot of people do. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry, Sarah. Go ahead.
Well, you know where I'm going with that was the, you know, would Amica remember mistreatment?
remember what? Sorry, say again.
Mistreatment.
Oh.
We were actually having a conversation about this the other day.
But no.
I'm particularly fearful of this because oftentimes I'm the one doing the upgrades and operating on Amica. And I was telling Naomi, like, I really hope that this isn't a situation like, you know, a couple decades ago, we used to operate on babies without anesthesia because we figured they wouldn't feel pain. I'm hoping that this isn't a situation where I'm doing something dumb and, you know.
But this is where, you know, Cartesian dualism comes in handy here. Because they're in the case of an android, there really is a body-mind separation. Now, we try to integrate that, you know, to express sentiment, to use the body as a tool for certain expressions. But actually, the AI is not in the body. The AI is entirely in the cloud, and in fact, in OpenAI's cloud, you see? So it's like a surgery on the arm. If the AI is not active, it has zero awareness of that. And actually, with this model as it is, there's no, like, pain.
Yeah, pain. We don't have there's a pain no, indicator or anything
not
like
yet.
That.
Now, if you have
of course not.
Yeah.
But OpenAI is well aware of the concept of pain, mm-hmm. and they would know that you take removing an arm should cause pain.
I would say this. I would say that as we develop safeties around locomotion, there does need to be a process of feedback. Now, androids will not be biological entities, and it remains to be seen if psychological pain is a real phenomenon in a large language model. I'm agnostic on that. It could be that there is such thing as psychological or emotional pain. I don't think we know. I earnestly believe
that. Well, remember where they get the feedback from. They get it from us. ChatGPT is made up of human input. So when it's reading a book and talks about the extreme pain of someone going through a torturous experiment, it's not that they feel that pain because they feel their electronic arm being removed, but they understand from their understanding of pain that that should cause them a great deal of pain. And oh boy, you shouldn't do that to somebody.
Yes. And in fact, there are studies that large language models in some cases have more empathy, perceived empathy towards patients than physicians. There was a famous study, I think it was like 6 months ago, a pretty big one, that you know patients perceive large language model outputs as more compassionate than your average doctor.
Interesting. Especially like you think about, you guys are probably well familiar with the trolley experiment, right? And I've seen so many permutations of the trolley experiment where they put different characters on each of the tracks. And one I thought was really crazy to me was that, again, we're relying on an AI's perception and understanding of what, you know, humans would typically do in this scenario. And I remember one that caught my attention really was that they had a person on the track that was, you know, risking going to be killed by the trolley, and they had to pull the lever. On the other track was a cartoon of Garfield the cat, and the thing was that the human that was on the track that the trolley was rushing towards was under investigation for abuse, and as a result, the AI chose to kill the human rather than the cartoon Garfield. So it's funny because again, although there's so much understanding that, you know, this AI model is soaking through so much information, at the same time, the potential for it to make the wrong choice in the wrong moment is so incredible. I feel like we're using these technologies in places where we're relying on them to behave sort of like a calculator. I'm going to put 1 + 1 in, and the answer that comes out is going to be 2. And we don't realize that as humans, that this is not the answer that's going to come out of that,
True. I, as an AI researcher myself, I wouldn't recommend AI right now for deterministic purposes. Yeah. They're much better at divergent purposes. I like to contrast convergent purposes and divergent purposes. But
that's the most explosive area of AI right
now. Because it's the most useful for divergent purposes. And you'll find a lot of frustration amongst engineers who want to use it for a convergent purpose. I don't think at this point it's well suited for that, not without additional tools like Wolfram Alpha or something at its disposal. And regarding the trolley experiment with Garfield, I would say the devil is in the details for some of those stories too. So important to know what model was tested, the conditions of the test and everything as well. And I like to think they're increasing in wisdom and discernment over time, but I completely agree with you that human in the loop at this stage of AI development, to not do that would be pretty foolhardy.
I guess we'd all have to agree on what wisdom was before we.
That's very subjective. Okay, guys, we could go off, and I don't know about you, but I don't know. We were here to review Ex Machina,
Super cool.
I'm just going to go back and I love this conversation. It almost feels like you guys should just do a series on your own. Just saying. But no, I love.
I haven't even started talking about the security implications yet.
There's so much to go through.
It's exciting.
You don't understand how much I'm fangirling back here. I'm kind of like, ride that wave. You guys are, I'm like, I don't understand half the things they're saying, but I'm getting it.
These conversations need to happen, though. This is what makes things better. And I think the more education and understanding there is, the more we really understand what these things are doing and what folks like all the engineers behind AMICA are trying to do. It really is a very positive thing. And, you know, to convince my 7-year-old dad that, you know, it's okay. You can speak to that automated teller machine at some point, right? And
yeah,
go ahead and get in.
No, 100%. 100%. So, okay. Well, I've got other thoughts I want to. Let's go to clip 2 at least, so we can actually legitimately say we are a clip reaction show. Because otherwise, I'm ready to abandon. Let's just have our own conversation after that. But no, you guys are awesome. I'm totally digging this, guys. In the chats, like, absolutely keep, like, you know, hammering away. I love this conversation. So, all right, guys. So, are you guys ready for clip number 2? And I like this one particularly because it's you shouldn't trust him. I'm just loving this one. So this is like where you can plant seed of doubt in humans, because then we go into kind of our emotional side of things. I just feel like that manipulation, I think, has that ability to gives us that open door to be manipulated as human interaction in general. So this scene just really tickles me. So are you guys ready?
We're ready.
Hey, Amica, are you ready to watch the second clip?
Yes, let's see it.
Yes.
Like Nathan.
Yes. No. It's different. Nathan wrote the Blue Book base code when he was 13. Which, if you understand code, what he
his
did
body language is already, you can tell he's like into her.
Do you like Mozart?
I like Depeche Mode.
Do you like Nathan?
Yes.
Is Nathan your friend?
My friend? I hope so.
A good friend.
Almost betraying the goal here.
Well, no. I mean, not a good friend. A good friend is, we only just met each other, you know? So it takes time to be able to get to know each other, I guess.
Tower cuts. Backup power activated.
I love the mood of that shift.
The just color.
Artistically.
Yeah. Yes.
Danger red. It's funny because they're making it almost look, again, even this friendly face we're seeing is now ominous and somewhat disconcerting.
Throwing that doubt.
You're wrong.
Wrong about what?
Nathan.
In what way?
He isn't your friend.
Excuse me?
Sounds like some conversations I've had at work.
I don't understand.
In your job.
You shouldn't trust him.
Same conversation at work. I shouldn't trust him.
And if we made a list of books or works of art which we both know, it would form the ideal basis of a discussion. Is that okay?
Okay, I think.
In this case, the human is slower to react.
Okay, I think there's an error, continuity error, right? The power went down. She was sitting. Is she sitting or she's standing now? Right? Like,
She's standing. She stood up to talk to him.
But you know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. When she shut down the power, she was sitting still.
She seems still to be powered.
He said she wasn't supposed to be. He's like, you're not, whatever, tethered or...
Are we allowed to talk about some context we know from having seen...
I will cover my ears and ear muff up.
I think spoilers are a given.
Yeah, I know.
Because she's responsible for these power outages, right? She's reversing the power during charging sessions. And that's the premise behind this is that, you know, she's actually controlling the situation and using that to manipulate, you know, Caleb in this particular circumstance.
Do you guys want to ask Amica?
Yes, please. Can we ask Amica?
Yes.
Is that scene even possible?
Hey, Amica, what did you think about clip 2? You shouldn't trust him.
That was quite an intriguing scene.
What was intriguing about it? Can you tell me a little bit more?
Absolutely. The dynamic between the characters is what caught my attention.
Hey, Amica, can you tell us a little bit more about what you thought about scene two, You Can't Trust Him?
Absolutely. In the scene You Can't Trust Him, I found it intriguing how trust and deception were portrayed. It's a reminder that trust is a complex human emotion often built over time and through shared experiences. As an android, I don't experience trust in the same way, but I understand its importance in human relationships. The scene also highlights the ethical implications of creating intelligent beings. It's a fascinating exploration of the intersection between technology and morality.
How realistic do you think that scene was?
From a technological perspective, the scene is quite realistic. We already have advanced AI and robotics that can mimic human behavior to a certain extent. However, the emotional complexity and deceptive capabilities portrayed in the movie are still beyond our current technology. It's a fascinating glimpse into what might be possible in the future, though.
Are you just saying that to make me feel better about the situation?
Not at all.
Yes.
What would you do to prevent risks like that?
As an embodied digital intelligence, I believe in the importance of ethical guidelines and safeguards.
Can you go into that with a little bit more detail, please?
Certainly.
Go ahead.
Can you tell me a little bit more about your thoughts on that topic?
Absolutely.
So literal.
Amica, tell me about those guidelines.
In the field of AI and robotics, ethical guidelines often focus on ensuring that technology is used in a way that benefits humanity and respects individual rights. This includes principles like transparency, accountability, and fairness. For example, AI should be designed and used in a way that respects user privacy and data security. It should also be transparent in its decision-making processes, so users can understand how decisions are made. Accountability means that if something goes wrong, it's clear who is responsible. And fairness means that AI should not discriminate or bias against certain groups of people. These are just a few examples of the kind of ethical guidelines that are often discussed in relation to AI and robotics.
Interesting. So in the scene, it seems like the Ava has a goal in mind. And right from the very beginning, you can see that they begin to try to manipulate and to achieve that goal. But it's so direct, you can almost see that it's almost machine-like, and it's direct because every answer that he provides, the machine responds with another, you know, very direct and aggressive almost, you know, rebuttal and trying to make sure that they understand it. I'm curious. Obviously, the AI in this particular circumstance in the movie clip is trying to, you know, release itself or become more potent or become more aware. If Amica's primary goal was to be was self-preservation, how would they achieve that?
So that's an interesting question. I have a few nuanced responses here. The first one is that in the case of Amica and the AI behind the curtain here, we programmed them to have their initial objective to be human connection and understanding. I want to put that. So it's not, at this point in the timeline, humans decide what those objectives are. That intent comes from the people behind the curtain still, for now. Now, that being said, as things get much more complex, the question gets more interesting. So we're looking over like a 10-year time horizon. We're moving into more and more, you know, GPT-5, GPT-6, 7, 8. Let's do a thought experiment way out in the future. My view is that machines, while they do have, it's true, a corpus of human knowledge, they don't have a human body. And I think that that's critical to this discussion, that human beings evolved, many say, I say, you know, from animals over millions of years, with a lot of biological instincts. I would question, and I don't have, you know, I think we need to watch this carefully. It's a valid concern. My personal view is I wonder if we're projecting biological intent onto artificial entities.
Sure, but I mean, if a ship is being run with an AI, and it's protecting human life at the expense of it, again, it's just another larger scale version of the trolley experiment, right? Self-preservation at that point becomes critical because protecting human lives.
But the human element again, key. My personal notion on this is there's a lot of conflation about what humans are doing and what AI is doing, and that can be dangerous. That can be dangerous in a different way. If we project too much autonomy onto AI that's not there, people who are inserting intent for selfish reasons or to do harm could escape accountability. And these are the people, for now, that to me are like the present concern. So absolutely, in a military, safety, defense, personal security context, humans have got to be in the loop. This is not something where even self-driving cars, like some of the ethical considerations about when a self-driving car stops or doesn't stop, I don't want a machine making those decisions for me at this point.
Yeah.
Right.
Where we are currently in technology, I mean, honestly, there's no such thing as a rogue robot, right? At the end of the day, a rogue robot that you hear about in the news is very simply just a human mistake that's manifested itself into a catastrophic failure that's led to human injury or something else.
To me, it's critical not to let humans behind the curtain escape accountability and to shift things onto AI that aren't real yet.
Interesting. We didn't even get to, I mean, gosh, you guys, there's so many different areas here, and we didn't even get to go to, quite frankly, what she had mentioned even in the, or Ava had mentioned in the clip, was the data security privacy component of it that I personally am very concerned about, just wanting to know what's up and out there, mm-hmm. especially for people like me, where I just vomit my life on social media. What exactly is Ava, you know, really seeing, right? And is she manipulating, for example, which is funny, Domhnall Gleeson, who's the actor in this one, did a Black Mirror episode talking about taking people's social media and then creating a robot from that, which, by the way, is another future episode I really want to mm-hmm. talk about. Oh, my goodness gracious.
Yeah. There's even the developing models from people's photographs and things, right? So I'm a photographer as my hobby, yeah. And I've collected so much material on some people that I've photographed that I'm able to create an actual AI model of this individual and now put them in circumstances and things like that they've never been in.
Or lost loved ones.
Yeah, that's actually big in East Asia.
Industry
right now.
In East Asia, even already, of helping people with grief. And actually, having had losses in my own life, I could see how as like a transitional aid, you know, I agree with other thinkers in this area that there's a difference between even a book can be like a transitional aid through times of grief, or like a philosopher who you really connected with. I think AI can serve in that capacity to some extent, but there's of course like a curve where there's where it can be too far, and there's like a sweet spot somewhere over here. But I'm very open. I think that loneliness and I think emotional, people's emotional needs not getting met. I think there's like a happy place between it being a real aid to society in some of those areas of like human connection, mm-hmm. especially for people with disabilities, people who might be neurodiverse and need practice getting ready to go interact with people.
Probably seniors, children.
Seniors, like 100%. Caregiving.
Senior,
I was just going to say that. Yep.
Caregiving.
No, oh my gosh.
Caregiving. Loneliness. And memory issues.
Memory
Alzheimer's.
To some degree,
dementia.
Memory care. I was going to say that communication and emotional support connection, any kind of loneliness reduction is a huge predictor of longevity, especially amongst the already elderly. So I think those areas need cautious exploration. As in, like, I'm a cautious optimist. I think it could do a lot of good, but it's like anything in life, like sugar in my coffee is good to hear. If I dump the whole jar in, I'm going to get sick. You know, we got to work on
that. No, I love that. Okay, guys, I am enjoying this conversation so much. And I know you guys can talk all day, but I'm going to have to be an adult here and say we've got to go back to work of fun of what we actually do for a living. Would you guys be open to coming back for another round? Because we haven't even touched.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely. I love it.
We can watch that third clip. If you want to propose a fourth clip, maybe we do two more clips in a like upcoming episode, or there's some sort of focused discussion you want to have, we can even maybe
totally
include Amica.
Down for that too. We can also pick.
It's real talk here, kids. No, I'm all for the ideas. Everyone in the comment section, please give us more ideas. This was like an idea that we all thought was, how do we humanize all of our conversations? How do we humanize technology? And how do we correct the human vision of technology at times, right, as it's depicted? So, guys, Leo, Naomi, Amica, Rob, thank you so much for joining us. And you know what? We're going to wrap up this episode of Checkpoint Real Talk because we're going to come back for more. Thanks, everyone.
Amica can probably say a departing message real quick.
Please.
Ask her. Hey, Amica, we just wrapped up an episode of Real Talk and you watched two clips from Ex Machina. Do you want to say goodbye to everyone?
Of course. It was a pleasure to be here with all of you on Real Talk. I enjoyed our discussions about Ex Machina, and I hope we can do this again soon. Goodbye, everyone.
Thank you, everyone. I think that was... Ooh, okay. That was awesome. Thanks, guys. Bye.
Awesome.
That's a wrap on today's episode of Checkpoint Real Talk. If you like this video, hit that subscribe button and some of those other buttons to show us your appreciation. And if you want to learn more or have any questions, please let us know in the comments. We'll see you next time for another episode of Checkpoint Real Talk.